Hello. Today is May 28th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from their World News section. The title, Exceptionally Early Heat Wave Shatters Records and Brings Deaths in Europe. By Jill Lawless, updated May 26, 2026, London. The United Kingdom smashed a century-old temperature record for the second time in 24 hours on Tuesday as a spring heat wave scorches parts of Western Europe, triggering government warnings about risks to life. Several drownings were reported in Britain and France as people tried to cool down. A temperature of 35.1 degrees Celsius or 95.2 degrees Fahrenheit was recorded at London's Kew Gardens, Britain's Met Office Weather Service said, breaking the record set a day earlier at Kew. The provisional readings smashed the long-standing record of 91.4 Fahrenheit set in 1922 and matched in 1944. London also recorded a rare tropical night, defined as one in which the temperature does not fall below 68 degrees Fahrenheit. Records also fell in France, where temperatures reached 97 degrees Fahrenheit on Monday in the country's southwest and widely remained above 20 degrees Celsius at night. The National Weather Service, Meteo France, said a heat dome with heat held in place by a high-pressure weather front was producing temperatures more than 10 degrees Celsius above what is usual for this time of year. Unpredictable and extreme weather is becoming more frequent. As Earth warms, experts say unprecedented and deadly weather extremes that sometimes strike at abnormal times and in unusual places are putting more people in danger. We know beyond a shadow of a doubt that heat wave events such as this have been made more likely and more severe due to climate change arising from our emissions of heat-trapping greenhouse gases, said Peter Thorne, director of the Icarus Climate Research Center at Maynooth University in Ireland. But nevertheless, many of the records being set, particularly in the UK and France, are mind-boggling crazy, he said. After a long weekend that sent people in Britain flocking to beaches, pools, and shady parks, London commuters sweltered on Tuesday in subway carriages without air conditioning. Trains to and from the busy Waterloo station were disrupted by a report of smoke on the tracks. In Scotland, firefighters worked through the night to douse a grass fire that sent smoke billowing from Arthur's Seat, the rocky hill that looms over Edinburgh. The UK Health Security Agency issued an amber alert for large parts of the country through Thursday, warning of a potential health risk, particularly among older people at the hottest time of the day. The UK is used to moderate temperatures, and many homes, schools, and businesses do not have air conditioning. At least 4 teenagers died in apparent drownings in UK lakes and reservoirs, and a 60-year-old man died in the sea in southwest England, authorities said. French government spokesperson Maud Bergeron said there have been reports of at least 7 deaths potentially related to high temperatures, including 5 drownings and 2 deaths in sports competitions. The early heat wave has struck before the annual summer window, when lifeguards watch over bathers at popular beaches, increasing risks. On France's Atlantic seaboard, where magnificent beaches have powerful riptides, officials reported a rash of emergencies in the surf, with 2 drowning deaths on Sunday at popular resorts in the Gironde region in the southwest. The top regional administrator, Sophie Brocas, urged beachgoers to exercise the utmost caution. The unseasonable heat extended to Spain, where Weather Service spokesperson Ruben Del Campo said, "We find ourselves with temperatures we normally see in the middle of the summer, now in the month of May." He said Seville hit 38 Celsius over the weekend, while large parts of the Iberian Peninsula saw temperatures 5 to 10 degrees Celsius higher than normal. And in Rome, temperatures were expected to reach 32 degrees Celsius or 89.6 degrees Fahrenheit on Tuesday. Hello, today is May 28th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from U.S. Politics. The title, Trump's DOJ Sues 4 Democratic-Run States Over Denying Undercover License Plates for Federal Agents, by Bill Barrow and Patrick Whittle. Updated, 11:30 a.m., May 28, 2026. President Donald Trump's administration is suing 4 states over their refusal to issue undercover license plates to federal agents, the latest front in the wider struggle between the White House and Democratic-led states over the Republican president's immigration crackdown. The Department of Justice alleges in separate lawsuits filed Wednesday that Maine, Massachusetts, Oregon, and Washington State are imposing unconstitutional restrictions that it says impede law enforcement and threaten agents' safety. By denying undercover license plates to DHS components, including ICE, while issuing them to their own state agencies, these governors are pursuing discriminatory and obstructionist policies against federal law enforcement, said Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche in a statement. These actions undermine federal immigration enforcement, allow dangerous criminals to escape justice, and terrorize American communities, Blanche said. The Justice Department filed individual lawsuits in U.S. district courts in the respective states. The four state governments are accused of trying to obstruct the federal government's immigration enforcement efforts, even though control over immigration and the nation's borders is an exclusive federal power. Additionally, the Justice Department argues in the suits that the U.S. Constitution's Supremacy Clause bars state governments from regulating federal law enforcement. A spokesperson for Massachusetts Attorney General Joy Campbell said the state's lawyers are reviewing the complaint and will defend the RMV policy to the greatest extent possible. Officials in other states have defended their policies but did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the federal action. Feds say agents are endangered when easily identified. The administration asserts that federal agents frequently investigate and apprehend violent criminals, including cartel members, gang members, sex offenders, human traffickers, and other violent offenders, and says making those authorities easily identifiable subjects them to increased harassment and potential physical harm. The lawsuit comes after a back and forth between the DOJ and some state officials. The administration previously sent state officials letters demanding they justify their policies. Maine Attorney General Aaron Frey answered the Justice Department last week, defending his state's policy and disputing the DOJ's contention that it has hampered federal enforcement actions. Rather, the program reflects a legitimate and constitutional policy choice by the SOS not to allow its resources to be commandeered by the federal government for use in civil immigration enforcement activities that have, in Maine and elsewhere, resulted in multiple incidents of abusive and unconstitutional conduct by DHS officials, Frey wrote. Shenna Bellows, Maine Secretary of State, announced a pause on confidential license plates in January after federal authorities ramped up their immigration enforcement activities in the state. Bellows said at the time that the state wanted to be assured that Maine plates would not be used for lawless purposes. The federal suit against Maine argues that the state has issued confidential license plates to law enforcement agencies for many years, and that such plates are explicitly authorized under Maine law. The state's review this year, the suit argues, resulted in unlawful state regulation of the federal government by requiring federal applicants for state license plates to attest that federal vehicles that obtained confidential plates would not be used for civil immigration enforcement. The suit also states that Maine did not impose commensurate requirements on state or local agencies applying for the plates, making the program discriminatory against the federal government. Bellows said last week that she anticipated the lawsuit. When ICE asked for confidential license plates, I said no. We don't have secret police in a democracy, and covert civil immigration enforcement is not something Maine will facilitate. If the DOJ wants to sue us over that, we'll see them in court, Bellows said in a May 22nd statement. Arguments are similar to debate over agents' masks. The Trump administration's argument on the license plates are similar to its defense of federal agents wearing masks on their deployments to American cities. That became a flashpoint in an extended government shutdown over Department of Homeland Security funding, as Democrats on Capitol Hill demanded key changes to how Trump's mass deportation plans were carried out after masked federal agents killed two U.S. citizen protesters in Minnesota. The White House and DHS have maintained the agency's mask policy, and the administration already has won a federal court order blocking a California law that barred law enforcement officials from covering their faces in the state. Additionally, the administration has been at odds with so-called sanctuary cities, where local law enforcement does not assist federal authorities with immigration enforcement, and Blanche has instructed the Justice Department's Civil Division to identify all state and local laws, policies, and practices that could impede what the administration describes as lawful federal operations. Hello. Today is May 28th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from U.S. News Business. The title, Key Inflation Gauge Worsens as Americans' Income and Spending Power Erodes, by Christopher Rugeber and Paul Wiseman. Updated 10:40 a.m., May 28, 2026, Washington. A key inflation gauge accelerated in April to the highest level in 3 years, squeezing Americans' finances and creating political challenges for President Trump and congressional Republicans, with midterm elections just 5 months away. Inflation jumped to 3.8% in April compared with a year ago, the Commerce Department said Thursday, up from 3.5% in March and the highest since May 2023. On a monthly basis, prices rose 0.4%, down from the 0.7% jump in March, but still higher than the inflation fighters at the Federal Reserve would prefer. Thursday's inflation report also showed that in addition to gasoline, prices for groceries, clothing, and electricity are also on the rise, indicating that inflation may be growing more entrenched. Inflation is notably above the Federal Reserve's target of 2%, which means Fed policymakers may decide to forgo any cuts to their key short-term interest rate this year. Some officials have signaled that the central bank's most substantial move under new Fed Chair Kevin Warsh could be a rate hike rather than a cut. Yet Trump and some and some his top officials are showing little concern about higher prices and the impact of the Iran war on Americans' financial health. Consumers have a dim view of the economy and have soured on the Trump administration's economic policies. Thursday's report showed that Americans' after-tax inflation-adjusted incomes fell for the third straight month, while spending adjusted for inflation barely rose. Trump has said that increases in gas prices, up more than 50% since the U.S. and Israel launched attacks on Iran, amount to peanuts. He previously said he does not consider Americans' personal finances even a little bit when mulling his options on the war. And on Wednesday, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said higher prices would be transitory, reviving an ill-fated term used by former Fed Chair Jerome Powell to describe the 2021-2022 inflation spike that became a forceful political tailwind for Trump in his campaign for a second presidential term. Excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core inflation rose to 3.3% in April from 3.2% the previous month. It is the highest core figure since October 2023. One positive sign in the report, core prices rose just 0.2% in April from March, down from 0.3% the previous month. Dan North, senior economist at Alliance Trade North America, acknowledged the core price increase isn't huge, but added, "It's the wrong way, and we think it will continue in the wrong way because there are so many inflation pressures in the pipeline." Americans' incomes were unchanged in April from March, in part because farm incomes fell after a large government aid package ended last month. Adjusted for inflation, personal income actually slipped 0.1% last month. Spending rose 0.5% in April from March, though most of that reflected price increases. Adjusted for inflation, spending rose just 0.1% in April, down from 0.3% the previous month. Signs of stress are building inside the American household across the economy. Joe Brussellas, chief economist at RSM, a tax advisory firm, said inflation-adjusted spending, disposable income, point to a slowing in May spending as inflation approaches a peak on the back of a historic supply shock. The U.S. economy grew at a modest 1.6% annual pace from January through March, according to a separate report from the Commerce Department Thursday. The country's gross domestic product, the nation's output of goods and services, rebounded from a lackluster 0.5% expansion the last quarter of 2025, when growth was hobbled by the 43-day federal government shutdown. The first quarter growth, which covered the first month of the Iran war, was a downgrade from the 2% expansion Commerce initially reported. Resilient consumer spending, mostly by upper-income households, and ongoing investment in artificial intelligence infrastructure are helping propel modest growth. Growth in consumer spending, which accounts for two-thirds of U.S. economic activity, slowed to 1.4% in the first quarter from 1.9% at the end of 2025 and was down from the 1.6% preliminary first quarter estimate. But business investment, likely driven by spending on artificial intelligence, rose at a 7% pace. Gas prices averaged of about $4.50 a gallon nationwide for 3 weeks this month before slipping to $4.43 on Thursday, according to AAA Motor Club. Gas averaged $2.90 a gallon the day before the war began. Yet the cost of many other goods and services have picked up in recent months, raising concerns among many Fed officials that inflation is being pushed higher by tariffs and other factors in addition to the war. The cost of services such as dental visits, car repairs, and veterinarian visits have been rising sharply, and clothes, toys, and groceries are also seeing outsized price gains. Rapid investment in artificial intelligence centers also appears to be driving up the cost of computer equipment and software, adding to inflationary pressures. Electricity prices have also spiked from a year ago. Hello. Today is May 28th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from Politics. The title, Supreme Court Rejects Meta's Appeal in Vermont Social Media Addiction Case, by Lindsay Whitehurst. Updated 3:43 p.m. May 26, 2026, Washington. The Supreme Court on Tuesday rejected a push to avoid a lawsuit alleging that Facebook and Instagram harmed young users, a decision that comes as social media companies increasingly face legal scrutiny. Parent company Meta Platforms Incorporated appealed after Vermont's highest court allowed a suit filed by its attorney general in 2023 to move forward. The company is facing similar lawsuits from states across the country, accusing it of knowingly designing addictive features. Meta had argued that it can't be sued in Vermont court because neither the company nor the app design has specific ties to the state. Vermont countered that the site's large number of teen users gives its courts jurisdiction. The Supreme Court declined to hear the appeal in a brief, unexplained order, as is typical. The procedural decision comes after court losses for Meta and YouTube in social media addiction lawsuits in California and New Mexico. Vermont's lawsuit was filed after an investigation by a bipartisan coalition of attorneys general in several states. Newspaper reports based on Meta's own research, also found that the company knew about the harms Instagram can cause teenagers, especially teen girls, when it comes to mental health and body image issues. One internal study cited 13.5% of teen girls saying Instagram makes thoughts of suicide worse, and 17% of teen girls saying it makes eating disorders worse. Almost all teenage girls 13 to 17 in the U.S. report using a social media platform, with about a third saying they use social media almost constantly, according to the Pew Research Center. Meta, for its part, has said that it has already introduced dozens of tools to support teens and their families, and suggested it would have worked with the states on standards for youth social media use. Vermont Attorney General Charity Clark applauded the decision, saying it affirms that companies that choose to do business in Vermont, like Meta, can be held accountable when they harm kids. Hello. Today is May 28th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from their science section. The title, A Rare Blue Micromoon Rises This Weekend, by Marsha Dunn, updated 8:03 a.m., May 28, 2026, Cape Canaveral, Florida. Get set for a rare blue micromoon this weekend, a blue moon that's also the most distant and smallest-looking full moon of the year. A bonus, the brilliant star Antares will photobomb Sunday's spectacle for a celestial three-for-one. A blue moon occurs every 2 to 3 years when a second full moon squeezes into a single month. May 1st saw this month's first full moon. Since the moon's orbit isn't a perfect circle, the upcoming full moon will be farther from Earth than usual, at a distance of 252,360 miles, making it seem a bit smaller and dimmer. It's the opposite of a supermoon, when a full moon comes closer to us than normal. The most recent supermoon, for instance, was just 225,130 miles. The Virtual Telescope Project's Gianluca Masi, who will provide a live webcast from Italy, said Sunday's micromoon will appear about 6% smaller and 10% dimmer than that of an average full moon, differences that are subtle enough to likely go unnoticed by most observers. The scene will be especially thrilling south of the equator across the Pacific. For stargazers in Argentina, Chile, New Zealand, Eastern Australia, parts of Antarctica, and a smattering of other islands, Antares will vanish temporarily as the blue micromoon passes in front of it. The red supergiant star, 550 light-years away, is known as the Heart of Scorpion in the constellation Scorpius. A light-year is almost 6 trillion miles. There won't be any disappearing act for those looking up elsewhere in the moon, in the world, with Antares constantly visible alongside the full moon. and despite the name, this blue moon won't appear turquoise, sapphire, or any other shade. The term simply means to the uncommon occurrence of two full moons in one month. Hello. Today is May 28th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from U.S. News. The title, Tractors, ATVs, and Golf Carts. Oh, my. Michigan seniors arrive at school in style on Tractor Day. By Mike Householder. Updated 12:13 p.m. May 22nd, 2026. Carlton, Michigan. Chase Harville rolled into the Airport High School parking lot Friday in southeastern Michigan one final time before next week's graduation. Harville was driving a family vehicle, just as he had countless times before. This set of wheels, though, topped out at around 25 miles per hour. Harville and dozens of his fellow seniors eschewed their cars and trucks and arrived in tractors, ATVs, golf carts, and more. It was all part of Tractor Day, a celebration that dates back to the 1980s at the school in Carlton, Michigan, about 35 miles south of Detroit. Most students arrived by 7:30 a.m., but the fun was to continue throughout the day with games, music, and lunch catered by a local restaurant. The annual event is not only a fun going-away celebration for seniors, but also serves to honor the area's agricultural heritage. We're just a farm school, Harville said. It's a tradition. Everyone's done it before us. We just carry it on. The fourth-generation farmer on Friday was behind the wheel of a Case 305 Magnum, the same tractor used to till the soil where he and his family grow soybeans and corn, and the one his older brother drove to Tractor Day 3 years ago. Maya Hoppert arrived bright and early in a John Deere 8300 that could practically drive itself to school at this point. The same tractor carried Hoppert's two sisters and eight of their cousins to Airport High during past tractor days. Last day with all my friends, said Hoppert, who plans to study nursing at Monroe Country Community College next year. Friday was one final hurrah, said Austin Netto, who may hold the distinction of having the most vintage ride. He arrived in a restored 1940 Farmall A, a tractor once owned by Netto's great-great-grandfather. A class treasurer, Jocelyn Clemen, helped organize Friday's festivities, which she described as our last recess. She expected that 150 of the roughly 180 seniors were taking part in Tractor Day. Clemen and two friends rode in an off-road vehicle known as a side-by-side. She had looked forward to this day for 4 years after, like other airport students, only being able to watch the end-of-year revelry through classroom windows. You could just see how much fun the seniors are having, said Clemen, who plans to attend Michigan State University in the fall. what a nostalgic event this really is, and how much fun the seniors look forward to it each year. Hello. Today is May 28th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from the entertainment section. The title, A Round of Applause for La Perera, winner of the Palm Dog Award at Cannes, by Louise Dixon, updated 1:04 p.m., May 22nd, 2026. Cannes, France. A round of applause for La Perera, winner of this year's Palm Dog Award at the Cannes Film Festival. The Chilean movie took the top canine prize Friday, a day before the festival's official awards ceremony. The quirky tradition on the Cannes beachfront was a celebratory affair packed with journalists, dog lovers, and of course, plenty of dogs. The sound of barking was interspersed with the clink of wine glasses as eager pups posed for the cameras and socialized with their canine pals. It was bon appetit for the animal guests as they were served gourmet doggy snacks, and look-alike local pooches stood in for their famous peers to collect awards. Screening in the director's fortnight sidebar, La Perera, Spanish for female dog, follows a solitary woman and her bond with an abandoned puppy, Yuri, named after the famous Mexican pop star. When director Dominga Sotomayor collected the coveted dog collar, she explained that she rescued two very special dogs to play Yuri from puppy to adulthood. Yuri and little Tormenta, who played the little Yuri, they are both rescue and they are both happy in their new houses. They were not trained, so it was really wild to work with them. Speaking after the ceremony, Sotomayor said she wanted to make a film where dogs are not just useful for the story, but are like characters themselves. I think both dogs were the heart of the film, so I am very happy with this prize, she said. Both the ceremony's top awards went to films directed by women and also to female dog characters. The grand jury prize was awarded to Lola, the Border Terrier cross, who appears in the British movie I See Buildings Fall Like Lightning. I See Buildings Fall Like Lightning also picked up the director's Fortnite Audience Award Thursday. The film follows a group of friends who grew up together in the same building complex on the cusp of turning 30, facing adulthood and unfulfilled dreams. Director Cleo Barnard showed up for doggy celebrations. After the ceremony, she honored Lola's professionalism. I loved working with her, and I would love to work with her again, Barnard said. The Palm Dog Award was founded in 2001 by film journalist Toby Rose with a mission to give equal celebration to canines at Cannes as their human co-stars. Former winners include Messi from Anatomy of a Fall, Brandy from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Uggy from The Artist. Hello. Today is May 28th, 2026. My name is Dorothy, and I'll be reading an Associated Press article from World News. The title, Exclusive, Inside an African Hotel, Where Asylum Seekers Deported by the U.S. Are Imprisoned, by Monica Pronczak. Updated 7:42 a.m., May 28, 2026. Malabo, Equatorial Guinea. At first glance, the hotel looks like any other on this tropical island off the Central African coast, with its palm tree-lined driveway, marble-floored foyer, and portrait of the oil-rich country's president hanging behind a mahogany reception desk. Yet the eerily empty, balmy hotel is not a refuge for adventure-seeking tourists or international business travelers these days. Since late last year, only a small number of people have been staying there, and they aren't on vacation. They are being held against their will. Under an opaque $7.5 million deal with the Trump administration, Equatorial Guinea's all-powerful president, Teodoro Obanag Numa Mozogo, has turned this hotel, owned by his family, into a prison for asylum seekers deported from the United States. The hotel is just a way station, though. Of the at least 32 people imprisoned there since November, all of whom had previously been granted protection from U.S. judges, their lawyers said, 25 have been forced to go back to home countries across Africa, where their lives might be in danger. The rest face pressure from authorities to leave. Government people would come all the time and say, "Where is your passport? You need to go back to your own country," said a 26-year-old man from an East African country imprisoned at the hotel. Out of fear of retaliation, he spoke on condition of anonymity, as did two other deportees interviewed by the Associated Press. The Trump administration uses deportations to third countries as a legal loophole, immigration lawyers say, to indirectly force asylum seekers back to their home countries. Because Equatorial Guinea is run by an authoritarian government, as are some other countries that have signed similar deals, it is difficult for foreign journalists to visit and report directly on conditions there. AP traveled to the island of Bioko as part of a recent visit by the first American Pope, and is the only international news organization to visit the hotel detaining migrants. Pressure to return to countries they fear. Trapped for now in a country many had never heard of before arriving, men and women from Angola, Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Mauritania wander the hotel's long corridors and gaze out the windows at the shimmering pool they are not allowed to use. They haven't faced any physical abuse, but they feel intense psychological pressure, knowing they are likely headed back to home countries they fear. "I am scared and depressed," said the East African man. because of his ethnicity and the fact he fled his home country, he said he would be imprisoned or killed if forced to return. All of the asylum seekers at the hotel face a high risk of persecution back home, human rights experts say. Under a series of murky and often secret agreements, the Trump administration has deported thousands of people to nearly two dozen countries that are not their own, advocates say, all part of the broad U.S. crackdown on immigration. The countries with agreements are mostly in the developing world, according to the group Third Country Deportation Watch, including roughly a dozen in Africa. Experts say countries accepting the deportees may be doing so to earn goodwill in negotiations with the U.S. over trade, migration, or aid. The Trump administration declined to comment on the details of its deal with Equatorial Guinea. A State Department spokesman said, "We remain unwavering in our commitment to end illegal and mass immigration." The Obiang administration did not respond to a request seeking comment. Trapped in the surreal and the mundane, as the man from East Africa at the Bami Hotel recounted his journey, a government minder who spoke little English sat nearby, scrolling on his phone in an otherwise empty conference room. After traveling from Africa to Brazil, the man said he arrived in August 2024 at the U.S. border, where he was detained. He then was shuffled between immigration centers in California, Arizona, and Louisiana before landing in the Equatorial Guinea almost 6 months ago. The deportees' daily routines at the hotel are mundane, though the setting makes it all seem surreal, he said. They sleep in fancy rooms that rarely get cleaned, he said, and they are served rice and meat at white cloth tables set up inside the hotel's restaurant. After being sickened by the food several times, the East African man said he eats the bare minimum. A local lawyer brings new toothbrushes, cell phone SIM cards, and for women, sanitary products. Medical care has been uneven. The East African man was driven to the hospital right away after complaining of an eye problem. But when he came down with malaria and typhoid, he was not taken to the hospital until his condition had greatly deteriorated, requiring an IV. Other detainees have had similar experiences, he said. Recently, the East African man complained to a police officer about his situation. The officer responded by saying his problems would go away if he went to the hotel's fourth floor and jumped out the window. "What can I do now? It's become worse," he said, his frail body shaking. "I started losing my mind." The U.S. has strong ties to and criticisms of Equatorial Guinea. Equatorial Guinea is one of the richest countries in Africa, thanks to its oil resources. It is also rife with corruption and human rights abuses, according to U.S. officials. a former Spanish colony, the country fell into economic despair after gaining independence in 1968. Its fate shifted in the 1990s when U.S. companies started drilling for oil along its vast coastline. The subsequent boom transformed the economy, yet only half the population still lives in poverty. The country's oil-fueled wealth has been largely pocketed by Obiang and his family, according to rights groups. Obiang's 57-year-old son and heir apparent, Teodoran Obiang Nugema, chronicles his lavish lifestyle on TikTok, soaking in infinity pools, feasting on lobster, traveling on private jets, even as citizens of Equatorial Guinea are banned from the platform. The younger Obiang, who serves as vice president, has faced international sanctions because of corruption across his father's administration. But the U.S. lifted sanctions, allowing the younger Obiang to travel to a high-level UN meeting in New York last September, just weeks before the deportations to Equatorial Guinea began. There are virtually no critical voices in Equatorial Guinea, where the government has been accused by rights groups and the U.S. State Department of detaining, torturing, and even killing those that dare to speak out. Despite that, its largest foreign investors are U.S. businesses, and its military receives funding for training from the U.S. government. East African migrant awaits his fate. The deportees still at the Bami Hotel know they can be sent home any day. Representatives of the UN's International Organization for Migration and its refugee agency visited the hotel in November and promised the deportees they would come back. They never did. The East African man is the only one among them that has been allowed to see a lawyer, though it's not clear why. While Equatorial Guinea has no asylum policy, his lawyer made a formal request with the Prime Minister's office, a long shot worth taking if there was any chance of being released from the hotel. He was told to plead for mercy with the county's vice president, but his asylum claim was rejected. The next morning, authorities deported five other people, leaving him anguished as he awaits his fate. He was told he would be next.